Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 102. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest Megan Jarko, head of the Sustainability Program at the University of South Dakota. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. The University of South Dakota is building a sustainability program at the campus in Vermilion, South Dakota. Though a young interdisciplinary bachelor's degree housed in the biology department, it is working toward a master's program and eventually a PhD. Megan Jarko is the founder and coordinator of the program. She works with numerous organizations in a basically conservative state to create a vision of sustainability. The means to reach that vision are very much in development among the various stakeholders in this agriculture-based state. In addition to Sierra Club, the Sustainability Club, Greening Vermilion, and others, USD is a member of UMACS, Upper Midwest Association for Campus Sustainability. See the show notes for links to Megan's sites. Here's Megan, recently recorded. Megan, it's so glad that as a graduate of USD myself, that USD has a sustainability program in the biology department. I'm really glad to know that and to work with you through the Sierra Club and other ways. Now, there are a variety of definitions of sustainability. On one hand, we have people who basically want to keep things the way they are. And so for them, sustainability means just keeping things going, sustaining growth, sustaining extraction, keeping the capitalist machine going. On the other hand, we have people who say sustainability means reducing extraction, reducing growth as necessary, using the earth as a model of how we should be living. So how do you deal with the tension between those in your definition of sustainability?
There is, as you say, a lot of different definitions of sustainability. The one that really resonates with me as opposed to a definition is thinking about sustainability in more of a visionary sense in terms of asking the questions, what kind of world do we want and how do we affect change to create that world? And so as I think about sustainability, I mean, I think there are common themes that a lot of us would love to see in the future, and I think there probably is a lot of agreement. And I think that sustainability, a bunch of the work is helping to articulate what is it that would actually make people happier and how could we work towards that. And I think if there's a focus on these more longer-term goals in kind of a visionary sense, it's easier to see that there's a lot of agreement and that might help determine, you know, the path that we would take to get there. And so maybe that would help bring together the different ideas of whether, you know, it's a more market-based approach or something that is kind of a radically different system. I think it's hard to have those conversations if there's a far-out vision that says, you know, here's what we want, and then we can talk about how we want to get there. Just thinking about the potential methods to getting to a more desirable future, I think is where it comes into more disagreement in terms of the understanding of sustainability.
Well, the sustainability program at USD is relatively new. I think you are the founder of the program. How did that come to be?
So the sustainability program, it is exciting in that we're relatively new. So we are in our sixth year now, but that we're growing. And so the sustainability program started as an undergraduate major and minor that's interdisciplinary throughout the university, but largely within the College of Arts and Sciences. And through our work, we've kind of been finding growing interest. And so, you know, it's been interdisciplinary for the first 6 years, but starting next year, we'll likely have a department called the Department of Sustainability and Environment to give a little bit more, you know, human power and administrative support in offering this interdisciplinary program. And then we're also in the stages of finalizing starting a graduate program in sustainability. And so that would be a master's degree and a PhD in sustainability. And so it really is delightful that USD has taken such a leadership role in terms of sustainability education. So we, you know, are one of, when we started the undergraduate program, one of about a dozen schools to have an undergraduate degree that focused on sustainability broadly. And once we have the PhD, we'll be the second university in the United States to have a PhD that has like a PhD in sustainability that has a wide breadth.
Having been a student at USD myself, I know that Vermilion is kind of like so many university towns, a progressive hotspot in an otherwise relatively conservative red state. Do you get negative feedback? Do you have to fight the state government for funding, things like that?
You know, it actually, as you say, I mean, Vermilion is a great town. People are really interested in having a vibrant community, in being progressive, in trying to, you know, take steps forward to have our community be more sustainable. So in terms of the community, I do feel like we have a lot of support. And I think that having the sustainability program has actually been helpful because there were people who had these interests but didn't. We had a base in some things like the Sierra Club, but I think that this has expanded people's opportunities to engage with sustainability efforts. So I think Vermilion is really open to it. I also think that having, you know, the campus having an academic program in sustainability has also helped move us forward on that front. In terms of getting resistance, it is shocking even beyond USD how little resistance there has been. So I did my PhD at Iowa State University, which of course is the land-grant university, and there definitely were some people, and it was a PhD in sustainable agriculture. And so the idea of sustainable agriculture, I think, gets more pushback because people see it as being opposed to conventional agriculture, and so, you know, there's a gut reaction that it's opposed to something, whereas sustainability more broadly, I think, doesn't have that perception of being opposed to something. And so there's been less kind of pushback on that front than I think if we had a more specific focus, you know, in one particular area where people perceived it as being opposed to something that they represented.
One of the features of your program is the study of the prairies, and I'm familiar with that because we've studied prairies in Iowa, and there's studies of prairies in Nebraska. And do you think that people think of that as kind of quaint, or do you think they're really serious that the prairies could be a source of biomass energy production? Or is that just a distant second to wind and solar?
I would think it would be more of the latter. I mean, my interest in using prairies in kind of these more profit-gaining or applied ways is that we almost have no prairie left. And you know, we have government conservation programs that encourage people to plant prairies, such as the Conservation Reserve Program. But you see things, you know, when corn prices went up due to, you know, increasing demand primarily for corn grain ethanol, you see the CRP land just being pulled out. People pull out their CRP land and put the grassland back into annual row crops or plow up native grassland. And so I think government conservation is important, and we need government conservation programs to help pay people to do restoration on their lands. I also think we need to find ways to pay people to put prairie back on landscapes because, you know, most of the land in this area is privately owned, and, you know, most of the people who are using the land are using that to make a living. And so I think it's understandable you know, for us to expect the people who are using this to make an income off the land. We have to provide opportunities where they can use the landscape to still make money, but also do conservation, which I know a lot of farmers and landowners and ranchers want to do. And so using prairies for bioenergy, I don't think that is going to be a source of a lot of renewable energy. If it could play a small role, you know, I think there'd be benefits to that. But my larger goal would be to find ways where people could plant prairie and have it be economically valued. And it could be for something like bioenergy, or it could be something, for carbon sequestration, or for reducing nutrient pollution, or for reducing soil erosion. So prairies provide a lot of these ecosystem services. They provide a lot of things that really are providing value. And so, you know, helping farmers, landowners, ranchers, be able to realize those values in economic ways, I think, is really important.
I hope this question doesn't sound sexist, Megan, but I've noticed that of the graduates of your program and the current members of your program, the vast majority are women. Do you see that as a trend, or where is the impetus for more women to go into sustainability than men?
I don't have the actual statistics of who our graduates are in terms of the male-female ratio. I mean, I think that is a general trend at the University of South Dakota, and I think at a lot of universities where more women are earning degrees than men. I certainly find that there are a lot of women who, you know, are really actively engaged in the sustainability program with the idea of, you know, training themselves in ways that allow them to better society. And I think, you know, that resonates with men too. But at least I know I see it with the female sustainability majors also, that, you know, are really driven to pick a field where it's obvious how there could be these positive implications on society.
I noticed that one of your cooperating organizations is UMAX, the Upper Midwest Association for Campus Sustainability, and UMAX is having their conference at Central College in Pella at the end of September, and I find their mission to be really bold. For example, it's called Redefining the 3 R's of Sustainability. And you know, we used to think of the 3 R's as reduce, reuse, recycle, but they're talking about resilience, resolve, and renewal. They're talking about political action. This is a bold statement. Do you find that same boldness in the USD program? Do you find the same boldness in the President's Conference on Sustainability at USD?
So I'm on the steering committee of UMAX, so I'm certainly, you know, I'm appreciative that we have UMAX as a way to bring together people in the region who are doing sustainability work. It's a great opportunity for us to, you know other sustainability professionals, both people on the staff side of sustainability work and other faculty members. And so I think UMAX plays an important role. In terms of what USD does compared to what UMAX does, I think sometimes there can be a split between academic programs and kind of the implementing sustainability on a campus type of work. And so, you know, the sustainability program, as, you know, the academic major and minor and soon to be graduate program, I think would do less explicit advocacy, whereas, you know, the Sustainability Club or Greening Vermilion or, you know, organizations that do sustainability work, which are certainly groups that are included in UMAX, I think that there's more freedom there or more flexibility to do more explicit advocacy work. And so UMAX is a little bit unique in that it's, you know, got the academic programs part, but then also, you know, more of the implementing sustainability piece. And so I think USD as a institution is really, you know, willing to start taking action to implement sustainability. And certain organizations are willing to start doing advocacy for kind of sustainability work. And then the academic program, you know, we do less advocacy in that sense and more training towards, you know, the skills one would need to be a sustainability professional and things in that realm.
Excellent. Let's take a concrete example. We know that the great aquifer underneath the Midwest is being sucked dry by farmers in Kansas to grow grain to feed beef animals, meat animals. The same thing has happened to some degree in Nebraska. I would assume that there's similar things in South Dakota. I know that Iowa is not really protecting its waterways because they want to make water regulations all voluntary. Is this an issue that the sustainability program or UMAX could be involved in? Is this something, when you talk about education, you're talking about not only educating students at USD, but you're talking about educating students in elementary and high schools. Is this an issue that you can really confront?
I think yes, on a few different fronts. So, for example, the sustainability program, I think, would emphasize, if we talk about the issue of the Ogallala aquifer and, you know, draining down the amount of water in the Ogallala aquifer, you know, the academic program would focus more on, you know, what are the issues behind it, who are the people involved, what are the rates of, you know, depletion. So trying to understand the issue from multiple perspectives, trying to train the students to have a systems thinking perspective on understanding it, you know, hopefully doing experiential things, maybe working with groups who are, you know, doing actions to reduce the drawdown on the Ogallala aquifer. And so, you know, the sustainability program would more focus on it on that front, whereas organizations like, you know, the Sierra Club or Greening Vermilion or the SUST Club on campus would do, you know, might have an event to kind of encourage a particular type of advocacy towards it. I was thinking we're not under the Ogallala Aquifer here, but, you know, you could imagine it would be something, you know, to could have an event that would be, you know, opposed to a particular practice by a group. Or, you know, another example that in Clay County, they're talking about changing the ordinance on the CAFO, the Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation regulations for Clay County. And as an individual, I certainly go to those meetings in order to say, you know, I think that we should not reduce the setbacks that CAFOs have from waterways. I think we should, you know, keep the current setbacks that we have that are farther away from water bodies. But that is probably different than what, you know, as the coordinator of the sustainability program, I would do. And so I think there's this balance between we need the advocacy organizations to, and then individual efforts to kind of make change that we might find desirable, but then the academic sustainability program training people how to think through these issues so that we have, you know, thoughtful, educated people who are able to then go on and affect change.
Another recent example was that the people in southeast South Dakota were able to stop an oil pipeline coming through their area. That was quite a victory, if I remember correctly.
Yes, and so that would be a similar type of idea. So this was before the sustainability program existed, but there was the Hyperion oil refinery that was trying to move into, that was looking to be built in Clay County. And the Sierra Club very, very actively opposed that and really did a lot of work to help stop that. And I think had the sustainability program existed at that point, I would have certainly encouraged students to, you know, be engaged and learn the issues and understand you know, why this might have environmental ramifications. And so I think still being engaged, being involved, but having some of the advocacy fall to, you know, the organizations that we have and that are growing, that are doing this important work.
It seems to me you do some pretty gutsy things there. You have just recently a showing of Al Gore's new movie, An Inconvenient Sequel, and you've had some outstanding speakers, you know, over the years that were co-sponsored by the Sierra Club, but that were on campus, you know, sponsored by the program. Francis Moore LaPay, for example.
Oh, yep, Sandra Steingraber.
Are you able to fund these programs through your program? Are there individuals funding these? Do you get pushback from having these kind of voices in public forums there at USD?
So, right, as I say that, you know, we don't kind of do the advocacy piece, we certainly are. It is my goal to help spread information, kind of factually accurate information about topics related to, you know, environmental conservation and social justice. And so, you know, the showing of An Inconvenient Sequel, which is, as you mentioned, the Al Gore's follow-up to An Inconvenient Truth, you know, climate change, whether or not, you know, everyone in the population thinks that it's human-caused, the overwhelming evidence is that it is human-caused. And so it's certainly not that the sustainability program will not take a position on things, that there is solid factual evidence to support that. Or in terms of, for example, we had John Eichard come and talk, and he is he doesn't support increasing the numbers of CAFOs on the landscape. And so for a range of reasons, but the reasons are kind of based in factually accurate things. And so we certainly are able to take, present information that some people would be opposed to, but the idea being, you know, just as I'm trained as a biologist, I wouldn't present information that was contrary to evolution, you know, that evolution exists. We have tremendous evidence to support that. There's the same things with sustainability. There's a lot of these ideas that we have a lot of knowledge supporting, and I certainly make it my effort to bring in people who are experts in those areas to talk with, you know, both members of the sustainability program, but hopefully the whole community in general, to increase our awareness about, you know, environmental issues and social justice issues. And so that certainly is something that we use sustainability program funding to support.
There are a lot of climate change deniers in South Dakota. Are you getting pressure to bring in climate change deniers to speak on campus?
No, I haven't heard anything about climate change, and I think because that is a hard argument to make. I mean, you know, there's just not a lot of factual support behind climate change not being human-caused. Where I did get some feedback and pushback, I should say, was related to the Sustainability Club had a showing of Cowspiracy, and the main premise of Cowspiracy is that animal agriculture is a major contributor to climate change, and it got on the radar of the South Dakota Cattlemen's Association, and so I got, you know, some amount of negative feedback from that, and kind of, I'd say threats, but not in a violent way necessarily, but not happy that the Sustainability Club would be having a showing of a documentary that is not supportive of animal agriculture. And so some of those, you know, the Sustainability Club as a student organization is certainly, you know, able to show a range of documentaries that they want to show, as long as, you know, I would hope they would be fact-based, and I'm the faculty advisor for the Sustainability Club. And so things that either seem to be or are in opposition to kind of current agricultural practices, I think are more likely to receive pushback in this region because it's such a driver of our economy. And so I think there's a lot of sensitivity to hearing negative information about something that you know, is the main sector of the South Dakota agriculture, the South Dakota economy being agriculture.
Megan, do you have any other things you'd like to talk about? You've talked about the future, the development of the program. Anything else, though, that you'd like to mention to us?
So the sustainability program, I'm housed in biology because they needed to house me somewhere. Is like a faculty member, but the sustainability program has always been interdisciplinary, kind of housed within the College of Arts and Sciences. And so it isn't tied to biology, even though I happen to be in biology, but it's an interdisciplinary program, but then soon we'll have a department.
Well, I noticed that your website is the Jarco Lab, and so it's you're heavily invested in this program. I mean, the website is named for you.
Oh, okay, so the Jarco Lab is my individual, so what they call them at USD is called personal websites, but so there is something a little bit confusing in that I'm the only faculty member with dedicated time to the sustainability program, and so, you know, in that sense, it's a one-person show at this point, but once we have, you know, more faculty, this will be spread more broadly, and so I do a lot of the work, most of the work coordinating the sustainability program, but then I also have kind of my research program, not all of which is exactly sustainability program. So I kind of have my research group website, and then there's the sustainability program stuff, and there's a lot of overlap, but hopefully the sustainability program, and it is growing beyond me, you know, because when we started it out, you need one person to kind of get the ship moving. But now, you know, and the formation of this department is a huge step in that direction where that we'll have more capacity. And so the sustainability program will be much broader than one individual. And it currently is broader than one individual. There's, you know, about 25 faculty who teach courses for the major. We have an advisory committee that has about 12 faculty members on it. But getting more faculty who have, you know, dedicated time to the sustainability program will help increase, you know, the breadth of expertise that we have.
So in your signature, you give the website for the Jarco Lab. So in the show notes, I should probably mention both that and the website, the USD website for the program?
Yes, I think that would be great. The usd.edu/sustainability.
You've been listening to my conversation with Megan Jarco, coordinator of the sustainability program at the University of South Dakota. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, click in window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review in iTunes. I urge you to subscribe to one of Simple Living Works' free publications, our blog, which includes the Weekly Digest and the Weekly Nudge. Just send the word blog to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've begun a new series in the Weekly Nudge called Healthy Political Practices and Spiritual Disciplines. I hope this and my other recent short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for over a year and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read at simplelivingworks.org. Click on recent comments in window number 5. Or see the link in the show notes. Time to wrap up this episode of the Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. Here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember, you can listen to all the episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit nor accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, "Live simply that others may simply live," as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. As you may sense, we put a strong emphasis on social justice. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.